Good morning, this is Fran Michelle. Today's Well-Read Red reviews some of the intersections between climate change and authoritarian violence. In the most recent report from the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, those conservative scientists have finally sounded the alarm, though many commenters have noted that the report starkly underestimates the problem. Portland has already warmed by 1.2 degrees Celsius, well on our way to that 1.5 marker. I wouldn't take any bets on the yearly wildfires going away. An even bleaker picture of the future emerged from the Trump administration in a draft statement written to defend freezing federal fuel efficiency standards for trucks and cars. The argument was basically that the climate is warming so much that reducing emissions would have only a trivial effect. Joe Lowndes, in a post available on the AnarisProject.org, notes that although many have seen it as contradictory for the administration to go from denying climate change to predicting a 7-degree Fahrenheit increase over the next century, there is, quote, good reason for them to now endorse this second position. It makes much more sense to the proto-fascism of this regime. Accepting eco-catastrophe as a fait accompli allows them to ratchet up their cherished extraction industries and roll back environmental regulations in the short run and prepare for the brutalities of authoritarian rule in the long run. Imagine the kinds of violence, repression, and control that can be justified by increased food and water scarcity, the abandonment of coastal and desert cities, mass cross-border migrations, growing internal refugee populations, and a collapsing economy. End quote. This makes it sound a bit as though the environmental catastrophe is just an excuse for increased authoritarian rule. It presumably is and will be an opportunity for the proto-fascist regime to increase militarized accumulation and violent repression. But there are further interconnections. Christian Parenti, in his 2011 book Tropic of Chaos, Climate Change and the New Geography of Violence, describes a catastrophic convergence, the collision of political, economic, and environmental disasters, which compound and amplify each other, one expressing itself through another. While the Tropic of Chaos referred to in the title lies between the tropics of Cancer and Capricorn, a region ravaged by imperialism, Parenti also notes that the developed economies are only neo-fascist islands of relative stability, fortress societies marred by the politics of xenophobia, racism, police repression, surveillance, and militarism, and moving further toward what he calls the politics of the armed lifeboat. But, he adds, a world in climatological collapse, marked by hunger, disease, and violent social breakdown, will overwhelm the armed lifeboat. Eventually, all will sink into the same morass. But the relation between climate change and proto-fascism is, again, not just one in which the two problems contingently converge and amplify each other. Climate change and proto-fascism can also both be understood as themselves consequences of capitalism, more particularly of the inevitable crisis of capitalism. It is not just, as many have argued, that capitalism in its current form prevents taking the necessary actions to prevent and ameliorate the problems of climate change, but also, further, that the internal logic of capitalism itself requires economic growth and prioritizes profit-seeking above all other needs. As Ajay Singh Chowdhury puts it in a recent article from N+1, it's a system that requires infinite accumulation in a finite world. Capitalism has not simply steered the global human ecological niche off course, it has driven us completely into a ditch. High carbon economic growth and exploitative resource use are constitutive of this system, not incidental to it. As the finite world has been depleted of fossil fuels, the remaining petroleum sources are more and more difficult to exploit, and have offered decreasing returns for increasingly toxic methods. But fossil industries have simply doubled down, producing more than half of all atmospheric carbon since the Industrial Revolution just in the last 40 years. And more than half of that has come from just 25 corporate and state entities. That includes the Pentagon, of course, the world's largest polluter. So climate change is caused by capitalism and by the apparatus of violence needed to maintain it. So, too, a common analysis of fascism, or proto-fascism, or neo-fascism, sees it as a manifestation of capitalism and exhaustion. John Bellamy Foster, characterizing the present administration as neo-fascist, points out that, in periods of systemic crisis in which property relations are threatened, such as the Great Depression of the 1930s, or the stagnation and financialization of recent decades, conditions may favor the rise of fascism. Thus, both neo-fascism and climate change are caused by capitalism, and both, moreover, have their most damaging effects on the already oppressed and vulnerable. There's an entire section of the 700-page IPCC report that deals with social issues and concludes, among other things, with, quote, very high confidence that climate change and climate variability worsen existing poverty and exacerbate inequalities, especially for those disadvantaged by gender, age, race, class, caste, indigeneity, and disability. End quote. So how, in this world of widening inequality and mounting suffering, does the extant political hierarchy maintain itself? Through force. By arming lifeboats. As Christian Williams and others have argued, the police have always been a force to protect private property and white supremacy. The exercise of legitimated force is now increasingly profitable, as well as crucial to maintaining current hierarchies. In short, neo-fascism and climate change arguably emerge from shared causes, have overlapping consequences, and are mutually reinforcing. But there is reason for hope and for continued action. Parenti notes that climate shocks can shatter oppressive relationships and open possibilities for progressive organizing and resistance. Just last week, Kinder Morgan canceled one of its planned pipelines. And though they were not allowed to mount a full necessity defense, the last of the valve turners were recently acquitted. Activists have been ramping up both direct resistance and legal actions, and communities continue developing plans and actions that can slow the damage and move us toward justice. As Rebecca Solnit has pointed out, taking action is the best way to live in conditions of crisis and violation, for your spirit and your conscience, as well as for society. For the Old Mole, this has been Fran Michel. The agenda's been reset, you can bet we're in for a blue. It's not postmodernist, it's not post-feminist, it's not the end of history like they promised. It's not post-structuralist, but post-industrialist, it's a new age of the fist. Pops, fist, it's a new age of the fist. Pops.